Welcome to All Sides. For generations of Americans, owning a home in the suburbs was the American dream, but the times, they are a-changin'. Now, many Americans are flocking to revitalized urban areas, and the suburbs face many of the same problems as cities, with some new problems of their own. Later, we're going to talk with Jamie Green of ACP. It's a community planning firm that has worked with Dublin, Upper Arlington, and Grove City with planning and development strategies. Joining us right now is Ron Ruditis. He's a documentary film producer, director, and writer, and the president of Ruditis Media, Inc. He is a three-time Emmy Award winner and six-time Emmy nominee. His PBS documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise, airs on WOSU-TV on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m. Welcome to the show, Ron.
And thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
To our listeners, do you live in a suburb and do you regret it? Do you want to get out now? Have you changed your mind about whether it's the American dream or not in 2011? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Go to our Facebook page as well if you want. Let's start out with that larger idea of change and hear a little something from the film.
These are not your mother and father's suburbs anymore. The place where my parents moved two generations ago is a very, very different place. In the 2000 census, we found that the suburbs were the place where more Americans were living than anywhere else. And in the 2010 census, that trend is accelerating. But we're not just talking about bodies, the number of people, the number of places, the number of homes. We're talking about a change in character.
A change in character, and it's been happening over ever since they built the first suburbs in the first place, it sounds like, Ron.
Yes. Yeah. The change is really the big word and the operative word here. And it's funny in looking at this, that statistic, mentioned, by Lawrence Levy, Larry Levy, mm-hmm. Of the National Center for Suburban Studies. It was really the statistic of the 2000 census and the change, the fact that more people were living in suburbs was one of the inspirations for the film itself. But once you look at that, it really opens up almost a Pandora's box of what does that mean? And certainly they have changed and evolved greatly, and it resonates, for myself, my family living in the New York area and being from Brooklyn and Queens, and it was their American dream to move out to Long Island, to the suburbs. That was what we did, and that resonates for a lot of people, in this area. And yet, now some of my contemporaries are going back to Brooklyn, mm-hmm. because it's hard to afford a home, on Long Island, and it's cost of living and a number of other issues that have emerged as a result of suburbs being built out.
You kick off with a history of how suburbs came to be, how the explosion, post-World War II explosion because of the housing shortage from the war,
yes.
And also the American dream of having fresh air and a free place to park, no less. But you get into quite early the suburban role in politics, and it's not inconsequential. Suburbanites decide most of our elections, but makeup of the suburbs is changing. So let's hear from Larry Levy again on that score.
What you can't predict is the way the suburbs are going to go. Right now, it is volcanic, it is tectonic, it is moving, it is shaping, it is volatile. The big question of the 2010 elections, which won't be answered for another decade, is whether the trend of the last 10 years of suburbs moving from Republican toward Democratic was the aberration, and what happened in 2010 is a return to traditions that will last a while, or was what happened in 2010 with the Republicans taking control of Congress the aberration, and in a few years we'll be back to the trend of the suburbs moving Democratic.
What does politics have to do with how suburbs will develop over time? Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, the political aspect of the story was one of the most interesting things to me in terms of a hook. Because when you look at it, as with the development of the suburbs, there are It's the shifts that are fascinating. And in my research, you know, along the way in doing this, there are a number of different studies and books that were written. One very good one by Juliet Gainsborough, who's a professor who's in the film called Fenced Off, with the suburbanization of American politics. And, you know, it's very hard to put your finger on it because the shifts definitely, as Larry, you know, says in the film, it is ever-changing. And I think that, you know, for certain suburbs and older suburbs, there has been a trend in the, you know, in the development of them. There were certainly, you know, more Republican in terms
yes.
of their development, and you know, it's typically, as someone else says in the film, you know, you think of the cities and you think blue, you think of the suburbs and or you think of other areas and you think red, and today the quote in the film is the suburbs are rather purple
mm-hmm.
because you know they're such a swing vote, but historically they started as very Republican, and we've seen you know in the past 10, 20 years you know shifts over to the Democratic side, and again, I'll leave it for experts far more qualified to say why. And part of it is even some of the experts in the film say we just haven't been able to really get a handle on it because it is ever changing. So it's a moving target in some ways, but there have been patterns.
My guest is Ron Ruditis, documentary film producer. His PBS documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise, airs on WOSU-TV on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m. Questions or comments for Ron, they're welcome. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There is no monolithic suburb. They vary by region, they vary by state, by city center. How do you even get your arms around what a suburb is anymore?
Yeah, that was a very big challenge in doing the film because once you say, well, we're doing, you know, I'm going to do a documentary about the suburbs, again, the Pandora's box opens, and what does that really mean? They do vary in shapes and sizes, and I tried to accomplish that, you know, visually in some parts where we see, you know, a surfing suburb in Huntington Beach, California, in Orange County, you know, which...
Yeah, I never thought of Huntington Beach as a suburb.
You don't, yeah, no. Absolutely, and yet, you know, and it's, you know, it was wonderful talking to residents, some of which, of course, didn't make it in the film, you know, some of the oldest residents in the area and talking about how it's developed, but that's one type of a suburb. You know, we show in the montage Lakewood, Ohio. Ohio, you know, another type of suburb, of course.
Shaker,
you
know, Heights and
Shaker
Hudson.
Heights and Cleveland Heights. And so they're different, and they also have different challenges and problems. You know, your southwestern suburbs, you know, in Arizona will have more water issues. And northeast, we have a lot of transportation.
But all of them share one thing, and it's the issue of density.
Oh, yeah.
And where the density is located in the suburb.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that also, you know, in trying to show some of the best practices and how some of the communities have dealt with this, you know, density for many suburbanites is a dirty word, you know, and I think that.
Multi-unit housing, that sort of thing.
Right, right. Well, and there's a big, you know, controversy over, well, what do you call it? Affordable housing becomes a dirty word for many. And then you say, well, they have creative ways of and different labels for it. Workforce housing, you know, is one. But the reality is how and the challenge is, you know, where do you do this? And there have been some solutions where, you know, we look at the bullseye plan, you know, in you know, Virginia, where they managed to have you know, concentrations of higher density near transit, and so what they do. But as you move out, they really only, you know, really developing and affecting about you know, 10% of the county, and most of the region remains unaffected by the development, and yet. It's an economic engine and a driver, you know, and it's good for the economy and good for business to have work and you know, walkable areas and train stops where there's access to people and access to things that people would need to live and work day to day.
Another issue that kind of affects the long-term character of suburbs is the racial issue. Lots of folks say they moved from the urban centers to suburbia for free parking and fresh air. I mentioned that earlier. John Powell, executive director of the Kerwin Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnicity at Ohio State University, explained the migration differently.
The suburban dream, as it took off in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, was also extremely racialized. In the 1940s, as the United States started the civil rights movement, and as we had really large numbers of blacks leaving rural areas, moving to urban areas, after World War II, with the promise of being integrated into society, we at the same time had white Americans living in urban areas moving out of the cities into suburban areas where they would have their own home, their own school district, and the underbelly of that was also racially homogeneous.
That was followed by another explanation about the impact of school desegregation. So what have been the long-term ramifications of the redlining that was common before it was outlawed and desegregation?
Yeah, I mean, well, we're definitely living with, in many of the older suburbs, the effects of that. And you know, we see that on Long Island in this area. We see essentially really racially segregated areas where you will have you know, white suburbs and black suburbs, and you know, and they're really you know, again, you can see that's really the effect of it. And what happens is you know, it's a wonderful thing, and John Powell is wonderful in it, and later on in the film he'll mention, in terms of a best practice, he mentions Montgomery County, Maryland, which has, you know, found a way of dealing with the affordable housing and education in the sense of really integrating from the beginning, trying to integrate and spread out, not really having concentrations of affordable housing here, where you have one community. They're not creating new ghettos, as mm-hmm. Professor Powell says. So they've spread lower-income people throughout the county. And what that means is, as Angela Glover Blackwell, head of Policy Link, who's also in the film, yep. mentions that, you know, you don't have a school where there's, you know, a majority of the people are poor going to that school, because they've spread it out, and it you know, the whole region rises. And I think that's an interesting model that is often pointed to. But one of the nice things too about doing the film is that, and I wanted to, you know, very intentionally to jettison the voice of God narrator that is typically used, and, you know, I've used it in the past. You know,
I noticed that wasn't there.
Yeah, and I've used that to, you know, and it's absolutely, there's a place for it, but I really wanted this to be more conversational and more of a peer-to-peer sharing, if you will, where the audience, we're never talking down to the audience, and you know, everybody is, it's almost as if you're having a conversation with some of these experts across the, you know, your kitchen table, or, you know. So I hopefully it works you know, in that sense, but that was, you know, something where you know, everybody could get access to some to what they, you know, people and experts that they might not have had a chance to get to talk to on some of these issues.
Well, the fact is, that's why we're having the conversation in the first place, is most people live in the suburbs now.
Yeah.
This is an issue that most of the people listening to this right now live in a suburb.
Amazing, right? Yeah.
It is amazing. Yeah. My guest is Ron Ruditis. Mm-hmm. He is a documentary film producer, director, and writer. We're talking about his PBS documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise. It airs on WOSU-TV on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m. We'll have a link to that for you if you want to know more on WOSU.org/allsides. Coming up, we're going to meet Jamie Green. He's a founding principal of ACP Vision and Planning. It's a community planning practice based in Columbus and New York. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us. And it's easy to renew your membership. You can visit WOSU.org/renew to make your contribution for another year. Your online renewal means less paperwork for our station, and that means more of your donation supports the programs you enjoy. And while online, don't forget to set your membership to renew automatically. We can charge your credit card once a year or send you a reminder invoice. It's a quick, easy, and efficient way to show your support and can help reduce on-air fundraising. Visit WOSU.org/renew for more information. A mix of sun and clouds today and a high of 92 degrees. It's currently 79 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:21. Partly cloudy tonight, cooling off to a low of 69 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and warmer with a high of 94. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We are talking about the suburbs. Most of us live in one, so we probably all have an opinion about it. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the Facebook page. You can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU, for that matter. With us, Ron Ruditis. He's documentary film producer, director, and writer, and we're talking about his PBS documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise. Also joining us, Jamie Green. He's a founding principal of ACP Vision and Planning. It's a community planning practice based in Columbus and New York. Helps communities around the country and recently in Abu Dhabi and Ghana. Locally, Jamie assisted Dublin, Upper Arlington, and Grove City with their long-range planning and development strategies. He's an adjunct faculty member of City and Regional Planning at the OSU Knowlton School of Architecture. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you, Ann.
The new battleground, you bring this up somewhat briefly, but it's a pretty big deal, Ron, is the conflict between the suburbs and the rural.
Yeah.
Denizens, I suppose.
It's interesting. You see the conflict, and there have been, and it depends on who you talk to in terms of their feelings on it. We could have, done a lot more on the conflicts between suburbs, rural, and also suburbs and urban and city. But I think one way to look at it, and a lot of the experts, favor to look at it, and it's almost, I think, you have to have a change in, we all have to have a change in mindset. And the suburbs, it seems, for me in the exploration, there's a bit of a isolationist. That's not the right word for it, so I want to qualify that. But almost a sense of being apart from something, apart from the city, and that's kind of in the genesis of it. And yet, there's a strong movement now to say, let's look at regions as a whole. Let's look at cities, suburbs, and rural environments as one economic unit. And so, in a way, it's moving into the 21st century. Many, many voices, some of who are in the film and some even who are not in the film, say it's not useful to look at ourselves that way anymore. And also I want to say, if Jamie's here, mm-hmm. it's just a pleasure to be here with you.
Yes. Well, you brought up a good point, something that Jamie grapples with, I'm sure, in his job every day, which is that in Ohio, as you probably know, Ron, there are lots of political subdivisions. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most it's rich in political subdivisions. Yeah. Jamie, let's put it that way.
I was going to say confounding.
I say rich.
Rich, yeah. Yeah, no, Ron, it's a
I don't want to start that debate. It's been a big debate here in Ohio, though, now.
Right. Yeah. Ron, it's a pleasure to be here with you, and I really look forward to next Tuesday evening.
Thank you.
You brought up a really essential issue about dealing with the suburbs. It's that they exist in a context.
Yep.
And, here in central Ohio, if you just look at the seven central counties, our core county and then the six that are surrounding it, we have 203 units of local government. And that's not taxing authorities, right? That's just units of local governments, cities, townships, villages, and counties. And, and a point of the obvious when you start talking to people is that, watersheds, the air quality, the road networks, you know, they don't know any political boundaries. But yet, if you're going to be efficient with resources, which is a huge issue for us in these times, and you're going to, you know, make good decisions, that regional framework is essential. But legally, the opportunities are stacked against us. And it really is, you know, in order to make regionalism work, particularly in the state of Ohio, it has to become an ad hoc kind of approach. And we've made great efforts here in building that with, you know, our local regional planning agency, the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. But it is a very, very tough, very tough issue to sort of get your hands around. But I don't know that there's really any way to solve some of these larger physical settlement pattern issues without doing it from a collaborative standpoint.
Some of the model communities you cite in the documentary, Ron, are in Virginia.
Yeah.
And that's not a coincidence. Virginia doesn't have the same issue with political subdivisions that Ohio does.
Right. Right. And, you know, it's funny, talking about the political subdivisions, that's something, Jamie and Ann, that really resonates with me being from Long Island, New York, because we also have, I mean, it's very the high fragmentation in government. And in fact, you know, we have a little chart in the film where, you know, Bruce Katz from the Brookings Institution is talking, I think, about that, the local, you know, the various forms of government. And, you know, we have a chart, I think, that's from Nassau County, New York, and you can just see all of the different municipalities and all of the different departments and all the different and indefinite terms for some of these. So it is a problem. It really is a problem.
Dave and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hello. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
I think this is a good topic, and I don't think we think about this very much. People just buy houses and assume they're going to have whatever they have, and then they find out they have to drive 5 miles to find anything.
They say buy a gallon of gas to buy a gallon to get to a gallon of milk.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's a problem. I think the auto-oriented development is what we're all complaining about, but we don't focus on it. And I think if we could turn around and go back to what we used to have in the whatever 30s, before that everything was auto-oriented, then it's much more pleasant. And you get much more of a neighborhood feel, and you get much more of a community result rather than things are just happening to me and I can't do anything about it. You know, high gas prices, high taxes, high everything. I think that, and also in Ohio, there's a particular problem with not being able to be part of your community by being part of your comprehensive planning approach. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear the comments on that.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting, and I think, you know, talking about the community planning, and Jamie can probably talk more about that of having you know, involving communities, and that's very, very important. And for some of the best practices, you know, we do show a couple of communities, at least one where the community is, you know, really people coming together, involving in various charrettes and community.
I think Angela Glover Blackwell makes a big issue of that. Mm-hmm. Jamie, what's your experience?
Right. Well, I really appreciate the caller's perspective. The involvement of the public and those people who live and work in a community, we believe, is fundamental to creating a plan that really is tied to their unique issues, but also that they take some ownership of. Legally, the only time in Bexley, in Arlington, in Long Island, the only time that it's really required to get the public involved is the public hearing process at the very end, right? That's the only time.
After all the plans have been made.
After you've done all the research, you've made all the recommendations, and that is just not a very healthy way. But a number of communities have really turned that around and have integrated the public in the process, as Ron mentioned, techniques like charrettes or workshops to getting people in that. And I think that a good planning process like that is one about listening and learning, those who are making the plans and those who are living there. It really should be a good educational process because, as was pointed out by the caller, a lot of people don't understand the consequences of these choices, but they are choices. It is no accident, you know, that Pickerington looks the way that it does or that Dublin or Arlington, there's deliberate policies, but it's a complicated issue. And people just don't quite have the opportunities to understand those consequences. So we believe that if given the choices and they understand what it means to live and work and play in a place versus walking, I mean, driving across the region, you know, they might make some different choices.
Yeah.
Nick in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, pleasure to be on. My question was about the trajectory of suburbs. It seems like there's a rural, then suburban, then urban spectrum involving density and complexity of economies and such. Do suburbs just sustain at the same level, or do they tend to evolve into cities or I guess, lose density and become rural areas? I just wanted to know what the mechanisms that are involved with that.
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
They age. Yeah. They age. I think, again, someone in the film, Bruce Cassidy, says, a place is like people age. They get old. They creak. They need to be, modernized and upgraded and repaired,
Right. They do. This evolution piece, I think, in terms of, I think, Anne, you said, that the suburbs aren't monolithic. If we look at our region, Central Ohio, we've got some very different kinds of suburbs. The Grandviews and the Upper Arlingtons are very different than the Dublins and the Hilliard. We've got what we call first ring suburbs, and those are basically landlocked suburbs. They're not going to grow anymore. So those communities have a choice if they're going to change and be, sustainable is reinvesting in redevelopment. You see that happening significantly in Upper Arlington right now. But the outward ones, I think, they're different in terms of their fundamental fabric. I mean, we talk about really two kinds of places, those that are walkable urbanism and drivable suburbanism. And these walkable places like the Bexleys, the Arlingtons, the Grandviews, they have, if you look at property value appreciation in the region, they were just recently in the Dispatch, who was in those communities have actually appreciated, while the drivable suburbs have really taken a major hit. So the question that is asked by the caller about what is really going to happen.
Where are they going? What's the trajectory?
Yeah, the greenfield suburbs, there are many people that are really quite concerned about those places not having the emotional attachment, the physical walking aspects. What happens to those is a huge issue for us.
And there's an economic underpinning to it, a very basic one that's pointed out in the film, Ron, that some people bought these nice houses and they can afford the house, but they can no longer afford the $150 a week to drive back and to commute in their SUV.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There is an absolute economic impact.
And the issue, Anne, on your point is that there is this phenomenon that people do drive to qualify for their mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't always fully account for the other part of their budget, the transportation, and they're very, very vulnerable. We saw what happened when the gas prices went up, at various times. Spiking makes a big difference for people.
Thanks, Nick, for that call. We appreciate it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guests are Ron Ruditis. He is a documentary filmmaker, and we're talking about his new film, PBS documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise. And also with us is Jamie Green. He's a founding principal of ACP Vision and Planning. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Let's hear from Lawrence Levy again from the film. He kind of talks about this trajectory a little bit here.
One of the problems with suburbia getting what it needs, not just to thrive, but to survive in many places, is that most people in the country, even people in suburbia itself, are wrapped up in the myths of wealth and wellness, that these are uniformly prosperous places, that these are homogeneously healthy places. But the reality is just not so.
And another speaker goes on to say that older suburbs are beginning to experience all of the problems of the cities and are struggling with the issues of redevelopment, regional malls booming in the 1960s, now vacant eyesores. That's pretty common across the country, Jamie?
Oh, it's absolutely common across the country, and we've seen it. We see it here in our own region with a significant amount of vacant retail space that— those places are already served by infrastructure. They've got roads, they've got sewer, but they're there as an extremely underutilized asset. Yet we continue to build on the edge, which, it's following, the market, following where the money is, has actually moved to. But huge amount of waste of resources or underutilized resources in that phenomenon.
We have from Alex on Facebook. He says, I am living in Dublin, Ohio, after 15 years of urban Chicago living. The positives? It's safe. Nature is close and beautiful. It's quiet. Good for dogs. Parking is easier. And safety is the major thing with lack of crime and danger. The negatives? The lack of food choice and convenience. Walking to destinations is hard. It's boring. That was in capital letters. I have to do lawn work and the lack of diversity.
Mm.
The diversity, we talked about that earlier, a lot of those patterns that were set back in the 50s with redlining have been sustained largely. Ron?
Yeah, you know, and but you also have the phenomenon of the suburbs on the other side that also being more diverse, because as you know, as we say in the film and a number of the experts say, that newer immigrants are moving right to suburbs.
Yeah, direct migration.
Direct migration to suburbs as opposed to going to the central cities, which was the past pattern. So the makeup has greatly changed, but you know, we still see obviously in certain areas the segregated areas.
Yeah, I think the other phenomenon here is that Dublin, in terms of its diversity, is not that diverse. But even the phenomenon within someone's where they actually live, I would be calling that a subdivision, not a neighborhood. That's the way that we built is this monolithic enclave of homes that are all basically at the same price point, which pretty much guarantees from a socioeconomic standpoint, you're not going to be diverse. But if you look at places like, Grandview, you can actually find a street where there's a 4-unit rental across from a $700,000 home. That is a richer kind of diversity. It's built into the actual framework of the community, but not built into the subdivision approach.
Steve in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, you got right back exactly to the point where I wanted to talk about, because I do not want to live in a diverse community that is different socially and economically. I want to live in a community where the people have the same goals and values that I do. I do not want to live in a neighborhood where I've got a $700,000 home across the street from a multifamily place. The values of the people that live in these different places are totally different. And it does not add to, it subtracts from the quality of life.
Has that been the case, Ron? Because you did look at some communities, the one you mentioned in Virginia, mm-hmm. where they worked to integrate specifically.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, is that the case? Well, obviously they're going to be, I think Larry Levy also, has a quote in the film about, there are different reasons for exactly what you're talking about. There are reasons that certainly historically there are reasons of exclusion and things of that nature. But very often people simply don't want the character of the neighborhood to change, and so there will be examples of fighting for certain developments. And that really gets down to it's really as specific as the community that you're talking about.
Right.
And there are no easy answers in terms of rights or wrongs, and I think that's one of the things that hopefully the film does is present that it's a complex issue and there are many sides to it and many reasons. It's not a there are many, many different sides. It's a very complex issue.
Yeah, I think one of the key points is about having choices, right?
Mm-hmm. Choices.
And the gentleman that just called in has a particular kind of living choice that he wants to have. We have that option in extraordinarily vast quantities in this region. But there is a part of the community, part of the region that would like to live in a place that when their lifestyle changes, they can move up or move down in that community without moving out and can maintain, the social connections they have in that place. They can actually mature and have connections. Frankly, I think one of the biggest challenges we have with people really feeling a sense of community is that we're so transient, in part because they don't have the choice to stay in their same neighborhood, their same community without severing those ties.
Once they retire and they're on more of a fixed income, that kind of a thing.
Absolutely.
And then the people in the multi-unit apartment across the street might not necessarily, the values, I'm interested in the idea of the values being different just because they have less money.
Mm-hmm. And also, taking a look at Long Island, New York suburbs as an example, very often when we talk about affordable housing, we're talking about housing that people's kids can live in. The
right.
problem is we have a big problem with the brain drain, the so-called brain drain, which means that, we have our children are being educated here, but they can't afford to live here, so they're moving out. And so we're losing a lot of our young workers, and we're losing, the future tax base. How do you negotiate that balance in terms of having housing that is affordable for people's children to live in?
My guests are Jamie Green, founding principal of ACP Visioning and Planning, a community planning practice based in Columbus and New York. Also with us, Ron Ruditis. He is his PBS documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise, airs on WOSU-TV on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. On the next Fresh Air, as All You Can Eat Week continues, we listen back to our 1989 interview with the late Julia Child, the original TV chef who popularized French food in the U.S. Also, some kitchen advice from Harold McGee, an expert on the science of food and cooking. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting and in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn on September 14th. Local food hors d'oeuvres will be paired with a selection of beers from some of Ohio's best breweries. Tickets are on sale now for $45 each. And be sure to visit our website to look for information about the Granville Inn's lodging special. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your tickets.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, offering continuing education courses to update your creative career skills. Information and online registration are available now at www.ccad.edu.
Be sure to join us tomorrow morning at 11 for All Sides Weekend and a discussion of the best food and restaurants in Central Ohio. That's Friday morning at 11. A mix of sun and clouds today and a high of 92, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 69. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the problems of suburbs, the problems and promise of suburbs, how they can be transformed in the future, what their trajectory is, with documentary filmmaker Ron Ruditis. His PBS documentary inspired the conversation. It's called Suburban America, Problems and Promise. It airs next week. You can learn more about it on WOSU.org/allsides. Also with us is Jamie Green. He is founding principal of ACP Visioning and Planning, a community planning practice. It's based in Columbus as well as New York. Questions or comments for us, we welcome them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I wanted to get to some Facebook comments, and we've got some emails as well from Walker on Facebook. I live practically a block outside of downtown in a large, affordable, historic home that is quickly rising in value. There are plenty of school options for kids between the lottery and private schools. There's easy public transit options, a large enough backyard to play in, great neighbors, walking distance of major cultural institutions, galleries, restaurants, some quiet evenings, some vibrant city evenings. I wouldn't trade it for any suburb in the world. From Alex on Facebook, I'm living in Dublin, Ohio after 15 years of urban Chicago. I've already read Alex. Email from Mike. We're considering moving from the traditional house in the Columbus Burbs to a condominium in the Columbus Burbs. I find this very interesting. What does the speaker think about condominiums? Ron?
Jamie, you want to take Jamie? That one?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think of condominiums as a legal structure, not actually a housing type. So, but I assume what he's meaning is a sort of a higher density. And he said he was moving to a Columbus suburb.
Well, they're moving from a Columbus suburb to a Columbus suburb, meaning it maybe is that person you're talking about that wants to stay in their neighborhood but doesn't want to have to keep paying the mortgage.
Right. Or doesn't want to take care of the yard.
Yeah, well, here's the yard, too.
Right, right. Yeah. So I think that probably is likely to happen a lot more if communities provide those choices. In a number of our suburbs in the last 5 or 6 years, and we might debate the economic success of these, but we've seen in the Dublins, the Grandviews, the Arlingtons, and the Bexleys, redevelopment of sites for multi-story housing that's higher end in most cases, but as a condominium legal structure, but allows people who might want to move out of the large, particularly older house with maintenance and move into something new but still stay close. Now, I think that's a greater trend. If there was more supply, you'd probably see more of that happening at a right price point.
Mona and Galena, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I live in Galena, in a very beautiful suburban. I love living here. Before we moved here, we used to live very close to downtown, and about 5-6 years. Now I am very happy living in this area. I have 4 young children, which is grown now. Some of them are in college, some in high school. I am so glad I moved out of that area. I still have family and friends who live in that area. Mm-hmm. It's so uncomfortable to live in that area. Like the previous caller said, I like community where everybody have a goal and to be successful, not up all night and sleep all day. And I think problem keep growing in a downtown area while people in a suburb, I know we have a problem in suburb too, but people in suburb have a dream. It is dangerous to live in downtown. I love downtown, okay, but it's very, very much hard to live there.
All right. Mona, yeah, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care.
I think that there's so much diversity. You know, not all the suburbs are as tranquil and as comfortable as that she describes. Not every part of downtown is dynamic.
Walker just described part of downtown.
So I think it is diverse. I think it comes back to the same point I was making earlier, is about having, you know, a range of choices. We are a diverse, you know, region. We ought to have those choices. And I don't think that there's anything that Ron and I are saying is you shouldn't have choices, but there are some consequences for governments, for individuals, depending on the choices that they make.
I wanted to get into the transportation issue real quick, and I think that we can get to it with Angela Glover-Blackwell again, founder and CEO of PolicyLink. Let's listen.
Much of the public transportation that does exist in the suburbs is designed to bring people in to job centers in cities, so that you have, for example, in California, we have Bay Area Rapid Transit, the BART system, and it is designed to bring people from suburban areas to work in San Francisco. Well, one problem with that is that if you don't have a car, it is not a public transportation system that allows you to move around. It's a commuter system. It doesn't allow you to be able to go grocery shopping or drop your kids off at school.
There was a lot of talk about transportation.
Yep.
Jamie, how big is this transit-oriented development? What if some of the folks that have called up already say, well, I don't care, I've got my car?
Yeah. Well, I think people are going to have their car, but we're not going to leave that anytime soon. But the idea that we could use transit as an economic driver, I think there's a mentality that exists probably in Central Ohio with most people that is a infrastructure piece for the disadvantaged. It's inefficient. It doesn't really help me in my existence. But the reality is, as I think Ron's work shows, that in places like Arlington County, Virginia, transit has been a huge economic driver and a huge way to impact land values as an economic component. But it also, therefore, provides some different choices. I think in our region, Ann, the transportation issues are significant. The vehicle miles traveled on an average person in this region are as high as most places, because that's really the primary choice that we have. And it's a chicken and the egg. We don't have like a rail transit system, so that's it. You know, how could you actually make that work? I can tell you, though, that there are some suburbs that don't really understand the relationship between their land use policies and transportation. They have these peak hour traffic issues that they try to solve because they may have some good jobs, but they don't have the full range of housing choices. So they've got this, you know, they want to, in some cases, maintain a small town character about the place, but they've got to build big infrastructure to handle a peak load of traffic to get people in and out at a particular period of time. And this goes back to the earlier point about understanding the consequences of choices. I think that a lot of the people think that these things are great but don't fully understand, if we don't provide these choices, we've got to solve another problem like traffic.
Yeah, and there are many different reasons why some of the choices are made, and the film talks a little bit about areas that that didn't want the metro. You know, you have Arlington County, you know, Virginia, being saying that they wanted a more urban metro, you know, system for economic development, and have, you know, done that. But then you have areas like, you know, Washington, D.C. and Atlanta didn't want the metro. And part of it, and as one person says in the film, because they, you know, were worried about who might go and move into the neighborhood, you know.
Right.
But they're regretting it. You know, their quote is in the film, they're regretting it ever since, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, choices that were made in the past for certain ways of thinking do impact our lives now. But I think Jamie's absolutely right. And people don't make the connections between what was and the choices that were made and what we're living with now. And even though the same, you know, it may be the same mindsets are maybe it's not the same, but we're still, you know, living with the effects of it. And then, you know, how do we put policies in place that can help us to move forward?
Another transportation issue that was raised was the issue of suburb to suburb. That's the lacking. That's a big problem in the Columbus area, Central Ohio area, because there are job centers in one suburb that attract workers from another suburb, and they've got to go through this horrible traffic to get there, or they can't afford to.
Yeah, I mean that's part of it too, and you know, obviously there's some role models and best practices, and talking about you know, Angela Glover Blackmore, you mentioned, has some interesting discussion in the film about again transit oriented development and having you know, the job centers having the transportation and affordable housing near transit, because if you know, it makes it, you know, if you can't, you know, you can't afford the house and the car, well, you know, maybe if you take public transportation, then you can afford the house. So there are lots of things to look at.
Jacob in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I was wondering, listening to this rather interesting conversation, how wealthy neighborhoods that we would consider, you know, highly successful, how do they impact the larger American community as a whole? Do they generally have a positive impact, or a temporary positive impact, or a negative impact? How do your guests view neighborhoods that would be considered upper middle class to upper class?
You mean, are they good for anybody but themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jamie?
Well, I think a couple of reactions to that. First is that there are some communities that we would consider in Central Ohio wealthy, established suburbs, but maybe from a fiscal standpoint, you know, Upper Arlington being an example, I think that if you look at average household income, you look at property values, you'd think that's a fairly wealthy place. But the other dimension you have to look at is the local government, right? Does that translate to the coffers in the city's budget? And in many times, it doesn't. And I think this is another one of those issues about connecting the dots, is what's the fiscal, the economic health impact related to choices that people make.
Meaning just high income, personal incomes,
right,
don't feed the beast.
That's right.
You need industry.
Right. And we have this misperception, and I see this across the country, where people think that any development is good economic development. But the reality is, with Ohio's tax structure, you know, retail is not a very good, you know, net revenue, net income
for
government. Mm-hmm. So that, but the other dimension of, I think the question was, yes, I think it does, in the world we live in today, it does make sense to have suburbs that have different attributes that might attract certain kinds of people that we want to have in our region. You know, Upper Arlington, as an example, is a very attractive place for the academic community at Ohio State, and bringing talent, having that kind of community that proximate to where their jobs are. So I think having trendy, funky neighborhoods are great. Historic neighborhoods and new neighborhoods, wealthy, modern, are all part of a complex regional, healthy regional economic housing choice.
It shouldn't have to be an either or, right, Ron?
Well, no, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. And we've seen, you know, seen some examples of that, you know, in terms of emerging communities and arts communities and things of that nature, yeah.
An email from John, he says, I grew up in Grove City and it was almost destroyed by thoughtless development. Developers cut up farmland without any consideration or responsibility for improving the systems required to support those developments. The result now is dense, isolated divisions with narrow, broken down roads. Now, Ron, there is a part of the film, undercurrent or a backstory in the film about a community that is kind of facing those same kind of infrastructure problems. They didn't have a proper sewer system to begin with, and it was a big, hairy deal to get one. It is expensive to do that stuff now.
That's one that's featured in the film actually over time. You know, you see them in the community is a Wyandanch, actually a suburb again of New York City out on Long Island. And over time, they had a visioning process and the community revitalization at the beginning of the decade. And, you know, we were able to then showcase in 2010, they finally got the sewers and you kind of see, and the film also explains, many people will say, well, what do sewers have to do with any of this? Why is it important to, if you don't have sewer lines? Well, you know, you can't have these cool downtowns or these mixed use and a little denser communities without that. And Jamie can certainly expound upon that a little bit. But they are very, very important for new growth and development.
We don't see them, but they matter, Jamie.
Absolutely. They absolutely matter. And I think the other part of the point I think is being made there is that, you know, some communities are embrace planning and looking long term than others. And, those are the kinds of issues that you have to deal with if you really want to plan a sustainable community. Unfortunately, in the state of Ohio, there is no requirement. We've got some of the weakest state enabling legislation to encourage communities to do planning versus other states. States like South Carolina, which I would like to think, and they wouldn't like to hear this, but maybe not as sophisticated maybe as, you know, this established state, they're required every 10 years to have a comprehensive plan that has certain kinds of components to it, and every 5 years an update to that. There are other states like that, but in Ohio, it's just not part of our culture to do that kind of long-range planning. And Grove City in particular, although in many ways you would say they've prospered, they haven't had a comprehensive plan in decades.
I want to thank my guests today and remind everybody about the documentary, Suburban America, Problems and Promise. It airs on WOSU-TV on Tuesday, September 6th at 9 p.m. We'll have a link to that for you. And any parting thoughts, Ron Ruditis, about the film and what you learned from it in the final analysis? As a document, because you're not an expert in the issue.
Not at all. And that would do a disservice to the actual experts, many of whom, several of whom are in the film. But I've certainly learned a lot, as with any documentary. I think for me, and I'm hoping the takeaway for the viewer is that, again, it's called Suburban America: Problems and Promise. And while we go through a range of challenges and problems, to keep the eye on the hope and the promise. And some of the best practices that we, can share. And I think for me, any documentary film, it's one thing to say, okay, things are terrible, and we have a lot of issues. But if you don't have that hope and say that there are other communities who are dealing with it, some more successfully than others, but it gives us encouragement and it allows us all to. The message I think is also not to stand on the sidelines; that we're all part of it. Part of our communities.
Well, thank you, Ron Ruditis, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ann.
And Jamie Green, any parting thoughts?
No, I appreciate being here. I think the issues your callers have raised are fundamentally important. About having an opportunity to participate in how your community grows and changes, fundamental. Thinking about the relationships between regions is important. And having choices, a range of choices in a competitive, healthy region are all important.
Well, thank you very much, Jamie Green, for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
Appreciate it. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, service of WOSU Public Media.